Good afternoon, you're listening to KMXT 100.1 FM. It's your public radio station. At present, it is fair. It's quite lovely outside, 57 degrees Fahrenheit here in Kodiak for today, mostly sunny, with a high near 58, calm wind. For tonight, partly cloudy with a low around 46, a west wind of 15 to 20 miles per hour for Saturday, partly sunny, with a high near 58. A west wind of 10 to 15 miles per hour. Saturday night, mostly clear with a low around 46, a west wind of 15 to 20 miles per hour. Sunday, sunny with a high near 58, west wind around 10 miles per hour. And for Sunday night, partly cloudy with a low around 44. West wind of 10 to 15 miles per hour. Looks like we can anticipate good weather throughout this weekend. Coming into next week, however, it does appear to taper off a bit. For Monday, a 30% chance of showers after 10 a.m., partly sunny with a high near 56. Monday night, a chance of showers, mostly cloudy with a low around 44. Tuesday, a chance of showers, mostly cloudy with a high near 53. And Tuesday night, a chance of showers.
Live from NPR News, I'm Lakshmi Singh. The Labor Department's out with a new jobs report that, as one economist tells NPR, is hard to hate but also hard to love. Employers added 559,000 jobs to their payrolls in May. Economists had predicted faster growth, but the gains were still twice as much as in April. The unemployment rate's fallen to 5.8%. Overall, this country's regained only about two-thirds of the jobs lost last year. Facebook now plans to keep former President Donald Trump's Facebook and Instagram accounts on ice until January 2023, if not longer. The decision denies Trump major platforms to connect with his supporters. Trump accuses Facebook of censorship, but Facebook's upholding its decision to suspend Trump's account following the January 6 insurrection at the U.S. Capitol. We have more on this from NPR's Bobby Allen.
Facebook says it will keep Trump off its social networks for 2 years and reinstate him only when, quote, the risk to public safety has receded. Facebook also says it will no longer treat posts made by politicians any differently when it comes to violations of the social network's rules. That's a major departure from a so-called newsworthiness exception that Facebook has long applied to politicians whose statements were deemed to be of public interest. Facebook is among NPR's financial supporters. Earlier this year, a Facebook-funded oversight board upheld the social network's decision to deplatform Trump in the wake of the January 6th insurrection, but it received criticism for punting the final decision back to the company. Bobby Allen, NPR News.
China has lashed out against a new executive order from President Biden that deepens a ban on investment in scores of Chinese defense and tech companies. NPR's John Ruwitch reports if past experience is an indicator, Beijing may retaliate in kind.
China's foreign ministry is calling on the United States to withdraw the investment ban. Spokesman Wang Wenbin says it undermines market order and harms not only Chinese companies, but international investors, including from the U.S. Biden signed the executive order on Thursday. It bars U.S. entities from investing in nearly 60 Chinese companies. The firms are either alleged to have links to the Chinese military or are involved in surveillance technology. The order expands the scope of an executive order by former President Trump. The foreign ministry's spokesman says China will take, quote, necessary measures to resolutely safeguard the legitimate rights and interests of Chinese firms. John Ruwitch, NPR News.
Senator Shelley Moore Capito, the West Virginia Republican who's negotiating with the White House over the size of an infrastructure package, says today she and President Biden agreed to connect again on Monday. Capito is leading the group of GOP senators working with the White House on a potential agreement as the search for middle ground between the White House and Republicans on the package remains elusive. This is NPR News.
Note increase to borough-wide property taxes. That's the big news from this week's vote on the borough's budget. While other budgets proposed by the borough manager and other assembly members included various increases to the mill rate, the assembly ultimately decided to support the budget proposed by assembly members James Turner, Scott Arndt, and Amy Williams, which maintained the 10.75 mill rate for the next year. The mill rate is expected to generate over $16 million for the borough. KMXT will be following up on details of the approved borough budget as it works through the borough finance department. While COVID-19 has certainly cooled down in Kodiak, it hasn't stopped. According to today's weekly COVID-19 update, two new cases of COVID-19 were reported for the Kodiak Island Borough, along with one new hospitalization which was transported off-island for a higher level of treatment. That makes for two off-island hospitalizations in just 2 weeks, a severe reminder that COVID-19 is still within the Kodiak community. This brings the total COVID-19 case count since the start of the pandemic to 1,132 cases on Kodiak, with 6 cases classified as active locally. There have been 48 hospitalizations due to COVID-19 to date, with no active cases presently hospitalized locally. Total deaths to date due to COVID-19 remain at 5. Last we checked, King Crab was narrowly ahead of 3 other Alaska seafoods in the Division of Elections mock primary. King Crab, of course, will never hold elected office, but the division is entertaining the notion with a new online election simulator. As Alaska Public Media's Liz Ruskin reports, the division sees it as a chance to begin educating Alaskans about how they'll vote in 2022.
The next statewide election, the real one, will be all different next year, thanks to last year's ballot measure 2. The measure makes several reforms. Most of the attention has been on ranked choice voting, but that's not until the November ballot. So that's the first lesson of Alaska's mock seafood election. In the August primary, voters will find candidates of all parties on one ballot, and they can choose a single candidate per race. Here's Gail Fanumiai, director of the division.
Just letting folks know that in the primary, you're still going to get one ballot. There will no longer be multiple ballots to pick from, and you will still be selecting one choice for each race that appears on your ballot.
Fanumiai says the division's public relations manager found an interactive online app that allows the state to set up a mock election. So they put 18 seafood candidates on a pretend ballot. You've got everything from black cod to gooey duck. Unlike in a real election, after you vote, you can see the interim results. When I looked, the mainstream candidates were all doing well. King crab, king salmon, sockeye. Fanumiai says the real fun begins with the next stage.
At the close of polls at 5 p.m. on June 15th, we will then tally the top 4, and then we will create a general election, ranked choice voting election.
Like in the real election, the top 4 candidates will advance to the general. Fanumiai says they'll put out word when the seafood general election ballot is ready, and then the public can go online and rank the candidates 1 through 4.
And voters, people will be able to see how that works, what the ballot's going to look like somewhat, just to familiarize themselves with what to expect when they go to the polls. And then at the end of that, they'll be able to see how the various rounds of tabulation work.
If no fish or shellfish wins a majority in round 1, the last place finisher is eliminated and their supporters' second choice selections are allocated to the remaining 3 candidates. The redistribution continues like that until one candidate gets a majority of votes cast. One thing to note, although this seafood mock election is online, Alaskans will cast their real ballots next year in the normal ways, in person or absentee by mail or fax. As an elections official, Fanumiai avoids partisan activities, but she does confess to a preference among seafood.
I love halibut.
She says this is not to be construed as a candidate endorsement. You can vote in the seafood primary until polls close on June 15. Go to the Division of Elections website or alaskapublic.org for the link. Liz Ruskin, Alaska Public Media.
The University of Alaska is launching a system-wide program geared toward retaining more Alaska Native students at the school and increasing the number of Alaska Native staff members. As KTOO's Bridget Dowd tells us, that's because the school found that Alaska Native students are enrolling, but they don't always stay.
Sarah Peel, whose Haida name is Tuktruk A, is a student at University of Alaska Southeast. She transferred from the Fairbanks campus, where she says the professors didn't make her feel welcome.
They were all white. They were not originally from Alaska. They were from Lower 48 or a different country. And they had little to no knowledge of whose land they were on. And they did not care when I brought that up in our classrooms.
Peel is talking to me over Zoom while bouncing a 7-month-old boy on her lap. She says that's another thing about her culture her professors tend to not understand.
A lot of Alaska Native students are not traditional students, meaning like they're not right out of high school. They're not single. They're not, a lot of them have kids.
She says her experience at the Juneau campus has been an improvement, but there could be a reason for that.
I've primarily switched to Alaska Native Studies and Languages. So all of my professors are Alaska Native, and I've kind of just like retreated into this little safe space.
In the past, Peel was often the only Alaska Native student in her classes, and more often, the only Alaska Native woman in her classes. She says that was intimidating, and experiences like that could be contributing to the lack of retention among students like her. That's part of the reason why she decided to help get the Alaska Native Success Initiative off the ground at UAS.
I'm thankful that the chancellor and a couple other non-Alaska Native people who were on that committee were open to change and open to recognizing how they're comfortable in their whiteness.
Alaska Natives represent about 20% of the UAS student population, but only about 7% of its faculty and staff. UAS Chancellor Karen Carey says she wants those numbers to be closer together. That would mean hiring more Alaska Native staff.
You know, just in terms of looking at things like hiring practices, are we really making sure that we are getting the most diverse pool of candidates that we can?
This week, the Board of Regents will be hearing the three campuses present their plans for accomplishing those goals.
We'll also be doing some training for all of our faculty and staff, because if you're coming here from, say, Chicago or Kansas or Texas, and you're moving here to work, you may not know anything about the Alaska Native populations.
Rinalda Cadiente-Brown is the Associate Vice Chancellor for Alaska Native Programs at UAS. She played a big part in coming up with the plan they'll present to the board.
There's not one size that fits all for any Alaska Native student. The course of study, what they bring to the university setting, the demands on them from the goals and desires that they have and the levels of support. There are so many variables that we hope by this work that we do our best to improve the system so that we have basically an answer of support for anyone and everyone that needs it.
Once the campus plans are approved, changes could come as soon as the fall semester. In Juneau, I'm Bridget Dowd.
Last Friday, Juneau had its first Women in Trans Skate event. Around 20 women, trans, and non-binary identifying people gathered at the pipeline to skateboard.
It was a rainy and cold Friday evening in Juneau, that wet cold that gets in your bones, and yet people still showed up to the community's first ever Women in Trans Skateboarding session. Inside the pipeline in the Mendenhall Valley, music played through a portable speaker, echoing off the graffitied walls. Skateboarders and a few roller skaters glided down ramps in the halfpipe. There were young kids there with the Zach Gordon Youth Center, young adults in their 20s, people who use she, her, they, them pronouns. Sarah Leggett works for Skate Like a Girl, the nonprofit that sponsored the event. She was very happy with how many people showed up.
Yeah, I'm stoked. This is like not at all what I was expecting. Like the parking lot is full and it's kind of shocking.
Sarah Leggett works for Skate Like a Girl, the nonprofit that sponsored the event. Skate Like a Girl aims to create an inclusive community through skateboarding. Normally, they only serve Seattle, Portland, and the Bay Area. But when the pandemic broke out, the nonprofit switched to virtual programming and let Leggett work outside those communities. When outdoor activities became safer, Skate Like a Girl started hosting in-person events again. And since she was in Juneau when this change happened, Leggett was able to bring the program to town. Leggett thinks it is important to have women, trans, and queer visibility in the skateboarding community.
Through Instagram, I started following Skate Like a Girl, Unity Skateboards, all these skater Instagrams, and just got really stoked on it. Finally seeing people that look like me. And I just went to a couple events and I was like, yeah, this is where I want to be. This is like where I feel the most comfortable in my body.
People of all genders and abilities came to Leggett's event, including young kids who were learning skateboarding for the first time. This isn't how it normally is at the Pipeline when she comes to skateboard.
When I come to the park, it's like teenage boys and maybe some dads, but I rarely find a femme-looking person.
For Leggett, skateboarding is more about the community than the skateboarding itself. And seeing people identify similarly to her in that community is important.
If you go to the skate park alone as a woman or trans or non-binary gender non-conforming person, and you just feel so isolated. And so I think it's really nice to have a sense of community, whether you've been skating for 15 years or 3 years, or today's your first day.
Leggett hopes to host future women and trans skate events once a month. And if the weather is nice, she might even have events outside. In Juneau, I'm Lindsay Brolini.
Sitka's childcare system was already in crisis long before the pandemic hit and radically shifted everything. Now, as Alaska's vaccination rates increase and more parents get back to work, they may not have a place to send their children. KCAW's Catherine Rose spoke with childcare providers in Sitka about how federal funding is just a stopgap until the larger problems within childcare are solved.
Last year, I sat down with parents and childcare providers to discuss the shortage of childcare in Sitka. They said that childcare is incredibly expensive, there aren't a lot of local options for working parents, and with high overhead, centers can't afford to pay teachers competitively, so staff turnover is high. That was just weeks before the coronavirus pandemic shook things up for childcare across the country.
I think it was kind of scary in the beginning because you weren't sure where the money was going to come from.
Lolly Miller directs the Sheldon Jackson Childcare Center. She says early in the pandemic, when health mandates forced centers to close, they didn't know if they were going to make it.
There's not a lot of money in childcare. For some facilities, it's a month-to-month kind of operation. There's not a lot of extra money sitting around to carry you over for very long. That part was scary, you know, not knowing if we would have enough money, you know, to keep the doors open.
But eventually, some money did come. Grants and temporary relief money, including a chunk of the city's CARES Act funds, helped keep them afloat during the pandemic. But now, Miller is running into a new problem. She's only open at half capacity. It's been that way for months, and parents are desperate to get their kids in the door.
It's the worst part of this whole thing is carrying the burden of a lot of these people around. I can't even walk downtown. Do you got room? I don't even go downtown. You know, they're desperate.
With parents going back to work, she needs to open back up fully, but she's short-staffed and says she's on the verge of closing if she loses any more teachers.
We do not have the staff to be able to operate, and nobody is applying for jobs. And we have tried. It's been on social media. Mine's been in the newspaper. Every parent I talk with who's calling in looking for childcare, I'm like, if you know anybody, send them our way.
Just down the street, Erica Apathy runs the Betty Eliason Childcare Center, where they've had to cut back for the same reason.
We actually had to very drastically decrease our program hours for our school age kids because we don't have staff. Mm-hmm. And so I had to tell parents, I'm sorry, I can only have your kids here from 7:30 to 12:30 because if I have them here all day, it can impact our license and we can get shut down because we're not in compliance with it. Mm-hmm.
Providers in Sitka aren't the only ones that are reporting challenges as the state begins to emerge from the pandemic. In March, the state's child care program office surveyed over 400 child care providers. 87% said they were concerned about their operational status changing. Most said financial needs were the top concern. And while in Sitka there are waiting lists for child care, enrollment is actually down statewide. Jenny Pollard works for Thread Alaska, a statewide child care advocacy organization. She says the staffing problem isn't new.
Recruiting and retaining early childhood workforce has been an issue prior to COVID and remains an issue today, especially in smaller communities. So, this is a workforce that does valuable work, but has an average hourly salary of about $12 an hour, and many of them work without any insurance or benefits.
She says the low pay is the biggest deterrent, but a competitive hiring market is making it harder than usual to find staff. But higher pay means increased tuition for parents, and tuition is already high to cover operations. But most centers want to pay their staff more.
We're hearing the primary support needed is for staff to help with wages and bonuses, incentives for recruitment and retention, and even professional development.
In their responses to the state survey, nearly 60% of childcare providers said they needed funding for salary increases and bonuses in order to retain staff. 47% said they needed incentives for recruitment and retention. Some help is on the way. The state is now trying to determine how it will spend federal funds from the CARES and American Rescue Plan Acts, nearly $92 million total allocated for childcare. While it's still not clear exactly how the money will be doled out, both Miller and Apathy are hopeful it will come through this fall and help carry them through the winter. But still, Miller says the funding is a stopgap, and she hopes people will begin to advocate for more long-term solutions locally.
If they want their people working, and if they want a viable, you know, economy here in Sitka, somebody's going to have to start brainstorming.
She says childcare is critical infrastructure, and only when Americans recognize it as that will the problems within the industry be solved. Reporting in Sitka, I'm Catherine Rose.
NPR News is presentada a usted en parte por la Providence Kodiak Island Centro de Asesoramiento. Para una cita o más información, por favor llama al 907-481-2400.
This is Fish Radio. I'm Lainey Welch. There really is a patron saint of salmon. I'll tell you more after this.
Fish Radio is brought to you by Alaska Boats and Permits in Homer, marine broker for vessels, permits, and IFQs, online at alaskaboat.com.
The Alaska Seafood Marketing Institute provides digital and print marketing materials to the Alaska seafood industry. Find thousands of stunning photos, high-quality video footage, and sales tools at alaskaseafood.org.
As Alaska's salmon season gets underway, it seems appropriate to acknowledge the patron saint of salmon. It's St. Kentigern of Scotland. Born long ago in 518, Kentigern was the illegitimate son of a king's daughter. He trained as a priest at a monastery where his sainthood evolved around a dangerous love triangle. Legend has it that the king suspected his wife of having an affair because she had given one of her favorite rings to a court favorite. The king took the ring when the man was sleeping and threw it far out into the River Clyde. When he returned home, the king angrily demanded that his wife show him the missing ring, and he threatened her with death if she couldn't produce it. In her fear and misery, the queen beseeched the priest Kentigern to help her. Kentigern took a fishing rod to the spot where the ring had been flung into the river. He quickly caught a salmon and cut it open. Amazingly, the ring was found in the salmon's belly. The queen was able to deliver the ring to her doubting husband, and peace was restored. From the time of his death in 603, Kentigern was regarded as Scotland's patron saint, and the cathedral at Glasgow was built in his honor. To this day, Kentigern's figure and symbols, including a salmon, make up that city's coat of arms. So who knows, perhaps a quick prayer to the patron saint of salmon will lead more fish to your nets. Find links to more fish stories, plus Alaska fish catches, meetings, and more at alaskafishradio.com. Fish Radio is also brought to you by OBI Seafoods, who salutes and says thanks to the men and women fishing across Alaska for their hard work and dedication. In Kodiak, I'm Lainey Welch.
This is the Island Messenger, a look at personal messages, the weather, and community announcements.
Good afternoon. It's time for your Island Messenger. At present, it is partly cloudy here in Kodiak, 57 degrees Fahrenheit. Don't let that dissuade you. It's really quite nice out. For this afternoon, mostly sunny with a high near 58, calm wind. For tonight, partly cloudy with a low around 46, a west wind of 15 to 20 miles per hour. Saturday, partly sunny with a high near 58, a west wind of 10 to 15 miles per hour. Saturday night, partly cloudy with a low around 46, a west wind of 15 to 20 miles per hour. For Sunday, sunny with a high near 58, a west wind around 10 miles per hour. Sunday night, partly cloudy with a low around 44, a west wind of 10 to 15 miles per hour. And for Monday, a 30% chance of showers after 11 a.m., partly sunny with a high near 56, and Monday night a chance of showers, mostly cloudy, with a low around 44. Getting into the marine weather, for Marmot Island to Sitkanak, a small craft advisory through Saturday. Today, variable wind of 10 knots becoming west, 20 knots in the afternoon, seas to 9 feet. For tonight, a west wind of 25 knots, seas to 7 feet. Saturday, a west wind of 20 knots, increasing to 30 knots in the afternoon, seas to 7 feet. Saturday night, a west wind of 30 knots, seas to 7 feet. Sunday, a west wind of 30 knots, seas to 7 feet. Monday, a west wind of 25 knots, seas to 8 feet. And Tuesday, a southwest wind of 15 knots, seas to 6 feet. Into the Shelikov Strait, a small craft advisory tonight and Saturday. Today, a southwest wind of 20 knots, seas to 3 feet, building to 5 feet in the afternoon. Tonight, a southwest wind of 25 knots, seas to 5 feet. Saturday, a west wind of 25 knots, seas to 7 feet. Saturday night, a west wind of 30 knots, seas to 7 feet. Sunday through Monday, a west wind of 25 knots, seas to 5 feet. And Tuesday, a west wind of 20 knots, seas to 4 feet. And the synopsis for the North Gulf Coast and Kodiak Island waters and Cook Inlet, an area of weak low pressure moves over the northern Gulf through Sunday morning. Today is Friday, the 4th of June, 2021. The sun rose today at 5:15 a.m. It will set tonight at 11:03 p.m. and it will rise again tomorrow at 5:14 a.m. For daylight, that's 17 hours and 48 minutes, a gain of 2 minutes and 20 seconds, a record high of 73 degrees in 1996, and a record low of 31 in 1973. For Kodiak District tides, a high tide occurred at 10:44 a.m. of 5.78 feet, a low tide at 4:44 p.m. of 1.45 feet, a high tide at 11:21 p.m. of 7.46 feet, a low tide at 5:56 a.m. of 1.36 feet, and a high tide at 11:54 a.m. of 5.76 feet. For west side tides, a high tide occurred at 11:21 a.m. of 10.65 feet, a low tide at 5:29 p.m. of 2.95 feet, a high tide at 11:47 p.m. of 12.80 feet, a low tide at 6:23 a.m. of 2.07 feet, and a high tide at 12:23 a.m. of 11.02 feet.
Listen for the Island Messenger here on Public Radio KMXT 3 times a day. Monday through Friday at 9 a.m., during the midday report at 12:20, and in the evening at 7 o'clock. If you have a community announcement or personal message, including lost and found items or pets, you can call KMXT at 486-3181, fax us at 486-2733, or email psa@kmxt.org.